Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me. Box13@greatdetectives.net. And follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Well, we begin with some listener comments regarding last week's episode of Dragnet, The Big Little Jesus. Robin says, we listened to The Big Little Jesus on the drive to and from candlelight services at church last night. It was very moving. I think it will be our new tradition. Thank you for all you do, Adam. Merry Christmas. And then we had a few comments over on the Facebook page. Cynthia says, I love that particular show, and it doesn't mean Christmas without it. Thank you, Adam. And Lizzie agrees and says, thanks, Adam, for hosting the Dragnet radio show. Andrew mentioned that he did some audio edits, and I did listen to him after the show was posted, and I thought he did a good job mixing in some additional audio from the Bing Crosby program. So thanks again to Andrew for all he does on the program. Well, before we do get into today's episode of Dragnet, I do want to let you know that my novel, Tales of the Dim Night, is now available as a downloadable audiobook. I know a lot of folks are on the go and not able to sit down and read. The audiobook is ideal for that purpose. We put a lot of work into writing it. Had some great voice work. And I think it'll be a really enjoyable production for anyone who enjoys the superhero genre and the classic superheroes. A lot of tributes and homages and some parodying done that I think you'll enjoy. So you can download Tales of the Dim Night from audible.com or you can also just buy it directly from the iTunes store. And I hope you download it and enjoy it. After today's program, listen to some details on the final episodes of the program. Now we're going to play another TV soundtrack for a script that was based on a radio program. This one's entitled The Big Trunk. This is not to be confused with the 1954 episode called The Big Trunk we played a year ago. Rather, this was the original script was from a 1951 radio episode that was adapted to television in January of 1954. So it's an entirely different plot. And here now, originally broadcast January 7th, 1954 on television, based on a radio script originally aired March 22nd of 1951. So please enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. This is the city. Los Angeles, California. I work here. I'm a cop. It was Wednesday, September 2nd. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide division. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Warman. My name's Friday. A man had jumped from a downtown 10-story building. We checked what evidence we had, but we were still unable to get an identification. Before we could proceed with the investigation, we had to know who he was and why he jumped.
Yeah, what's doing?
Well, not much, Doc. You seen Frank around? He was supposed to meet me here.
Passed him in the hall of communications. Said he'd be right back.
Thanks. What's keeping you busy?
Well, about the same. A little hectic around the house, though.
That's right. Frank mentioned something about that. You're getting ready for a wedding out at your house, aren't you?
Yeah, my daughter Alice. She's getting a nice fellow.
That's so?
Yeah. Ambitious boy, smart. He's a part-time accountant, goes to law school at night down in Loyola. Real nice fellow.
That's good. When are you getting married?
Week from Saturday. My wife finally got her way. It's going to be a big church thing. Sure glad it doesn't happen often.
Well, you should have had all boys, gosh. You're going to give your daughter away, I suppose.
Yeah. Sorry, that reminds me. I've got to be sure and send my suit to the cleaners. It's a good press job on it. Sure is funny.
What is?
Seems the wife's been afraid for years we never get Alice married off. Now it's finding in the works, the wife's still unhappy.
Oh, how's that?
Well, she goes moping around the house, dabbing her eyes with a handkerchief, keeps muttering something about losing a little girl, a little girl's leaving her. I don't know.
Well, how old is your daughter, Alice?
32. Well, guess I better get started on this.
Hi.
Frank, what's going?
How'd you do on that job?
Nothing.
Still make on the fence, huh?
No, a couple of laundry marks on his clothes, we're checking them out.
Yeah. Anything off doing?
No. Well, they just posted the list inside, the annual physical exam.
Am I on it?
Sure, both of us. We're supposed to report to room 19 at the academy Monday, 10 o'clock.
Who's doing the examinations?
Dr. Severin.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Well, he's the one that checked me over last year. Told me to take off some weight. I haven't lost an ounce.
Well, I thought you were on a diet.
I am, Joe. Even got one of those little calorie gizmos. You know, it tells you how many calories and everything.
Yeah, I heard of it.
Doesn't do any good. I'm still gaining.
Well, it seems to me if you keep cut, you should lose some weight.
You know me in addition, Joe. How about some lunch, huh?
Hot shot.
I got it.
Well, here's one to roll out. I'll meet you out there.
What is it?
Page Hotel, room 12.
Yeah.
Looks like murder.
A.M. We located the Stage Hotel on West Howard Street, half a dozen blocks from the City Hall. It was in the heart of the Skid Row district, a white stucco building, three stories. We identified ourselves to the manager of the hotel, a Mrs. Lorraine Washburn. She led the way up a flight of stairs to the second floor. The hallway was dingy. Down at the end on the left was room 12. We went in. The room was crowded with furniture, bric-a-brac, odds and ends. The walls were covered with pictures of old-time vaudeville stars, autographed programs, and theatrical posters. In the center of the room was an open steamer trunk full of costumes and bundles of new equipment. It looked like it had been ransacked. Tied to a chair was the body of a woman. She looked to be about 30 years of age, red hair. She'd been badly beaten about the face and head. Near the body was an empty wine bottle, a pair of broken glasses, and a length of steel pipe about 10 inches long. There were bloodstains on it. Frank put in a call to the office and then to the crime lab. The landlady identified the victim as Thelma Porter. We asked the landlady what time she discovered the body.
About 11:20 this morning. Just where it is now, Sergeant. Nothing's been touched. I haven't mentioned it to anyone in the hotel.
Of course. How long had the victim been staying here at the hotel, Miss Watson?
At least 2 years. Maybe a little more than that. Isn't it a terrible thing? It just doesn't make sense.
How do you mean that?
Thelma didn't have any money. She was just like most of the people I have here. Stage folks. They're all older people. Most of them don't work too often. Live from hand to mouth most of the time.
I see. Did Thelma Porter live in this room here alone?
Yes, that's right. This is the thing, though. Thelma used to be married. Her husband died in East about 10 years ago, I think. Name was Carl. Thelma and Carl. There used to be an old vaudeville king, the two of them. Rose and Bernard.
Did the Porter woman have any friends here at the hotel, ma'am?
Oh, yes. She knew everybody. All my people are friendly with each other. Most of them are friends. I guess we'll have to tell all of them about this.
Yes, ma'am. I'm afraid so.
Well, Miss Washburn, when was the last time you saw Mrs. Porter? I mean, before this morning, of course.
Just after midnight last night. I was sitting down in the lobby reading, just about to go to bed. Thelma came in with George Steele. He's a friend of Thelma's, lives here in the hotel. Thelma said goodnight and came upstairs here to her room. George and I sat a bit and talked, maybe 10, 15 minutes. Then this morning I was taking the fresh linen around to the rooms. Knocked on Thelma's door, but she didn't answer. Finally opened up with the pass key. There it was.
Well, this George Steele that Mrs. Porter came in with, had she been out on a date with him, would you know?
No, not exactly. You see, Thelma spent quite a bit of time at a bar down the street, Jack Hanley's place. She was there 5, 6 nights every week.
I see.
George dropped in for a bottle of beer, had one with them, I guess. Then the two of them came back to the hotel together.
Did you have any visitors last night, do you know?
No, sir, I didn't.
Does she have any enemies that you might know of? Maybe somebody she didn't get along with?
No, nobody I know.
And you can't think of a reason why anybody would want to kill her?
I don't know. Maybe somebody thought she had money. She didn't. Not even enough to bury her. I don't know what's going to happen.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
That's Mrs. Watson, the manager.
How do you do, Mrs. Watson?
How do you do?
This is it.
Crime lab crew on the way over?
Yeah, they won't be here in a minute.
Will you be needing any animal, Sergeant? Can I go now?
We've got a few more questions we'd like to ask you, ma'am, if you don't mind.
It's quite a shock, you know. Terrible thing to have happen.
Yes, ma'am.
Such a terrible thing. All mixed up. I'm going to have to explain.
What's that, ma'am?
She was 3 weeks behind in her rent. I carried her on the books. The owner of the hotel is going to want the rent money. It's going to have to come from someplace.
Well, how did Mrs. Porter live? Didn't she have any income at all?
She worked occasionally, odd jobs. Then she'd have the unemployment insurance. Even that ran out on her 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I see.
There's no reason in the world for it, Sergeant Killington. She wasn't too young or very pretty. She wasn't worth anything. She didn't even have a decent coat to go out in.
Yes, ma'am.
That trunk over there, full of feathers. That's all she had. What sense does that make?
I don't know, ma'am. We haven't started checking yet.
Her clothes, a couple of scrapbooks. Nobody'd kill her for that. Pile of old news clippings.
I don't know. It's been done for less.
I continue to interview the landlady, Mrs. Washburn. She told me that the victim had quite a few male acquaintances that she'd met at neighborhood bars. She gave me the names of all those she knew of. 12:45 p.m., Sergeant Jay Allen and the crew from the crime lab arrived. The body in the murder room were photographed from all angles. Dean Bergman processed everything in the room for latent fingerprints. The place was gone over thoroughly for further physical evidence. The only thing that didn't seem to belong in the room was the apparent murder weapon, a 10-inch length of steel pipe found beside the body. 1:05 p.m. After we put in a call to the coroner's office, we started checking with the residents of the hotel. No one gave us any direct leads to the killing, but more than a half a dozen of them told us that Mrs. Porter had been in the habit of making vague remarks about what she kept in that steamer trunk in her room. She made a point of never opening the trunk for anyone, and she hinted constantly, even in public, that she kept something of value inside. 4:45 p.m. We started checking out the list of the murdered woman's friends which Mrs. Washburn and the tenants had given us. It went slow. We got little or nothing from the first dozen names on the list. 9:50 p.m. We went back to the office.
Well, we've had better days, that's for sure.
It's a lousy start. It couldn't be going much slower.
We must have logged 40 miles of legwork. Nothing to show for it.
Yeah. Hi, Doc.
All right, how'd you do?
Not much. How about you and McCready?
We checked out 10 names on the list, the Porter woman's friends. The only thing they could tell us we already knew. That business about the steamer trunk, Mrs. Porter hitting around here, something valuable in it.
Well, where's that leave us?
We got a fair motive to go on. The crime lab called just before you came in.
They get anything?
No latent prints. They went over that steamer trunk, though, found 100 shares of some kind of mining stock sold in the liner of the trunk.
Worth anything?
Not the paper it's printed on. Never was worth anything, according to the broker who checked it. I got the blow-ups. Want to take a look at them?
Yeah, thanks. With a wine bottle. The wine drinker. Well, it looks like he stepped in their glasses and broke them. Sure brutal, isn't it? Sure prowled the trunk, didn't it?
It sets up the motive pretty well. The Porter woman spent plenty of time at bars. She had a lot of men friends. We know she did a lot of talking about the nest egg she was supposed to have locked up in that trunk.
So one of her boyfriends believed her, went up to have a look through the trunk, didn't know she was in the room, had to kill her.
It's a good possibility. Oh, we got the word from the coroner's office, by the way.
Well, what did they have to say?
Cause of death was multiple skull fractures. They're sure they linked the pipe as a murder weapon. Mrs. Porter died about 4 a.m., they figure. Killer sure gave her a vicious beating.
Looks like more legwork, huh? I wish it was an easier way. Every bar she drank at, everybody she talked to, we'll have to check them all.
You know, there's just one thing that's definitely stopped, Joe.
Yeah, what's that?
Thelma Porter. Don't you think she had an idea that mining stuff was worthless?
Yeah, I guess she did.
Why'd she hang on with it? Why did she even keep the stuff around?
I don't know, gosh. The only thing she had left were the scrapbooks, a couple of theater posters.
Yeah.
She knew they'd never pay off.
Along with Gotch and McCready, we went back to the West Howard Street neighborhood and started checking down the list of people known to the dead woman. One of them was a Miss Babs Sheldon, a singer in a small cabaret on the corner of West Howard and Pacheco. We went back to a small dressing room where we questioned the Sheldon girl. She said she'd known the victim for about 5 years.
I kept telling Sonny to get out of that hotel. Living with those has-beens wasn't any good for her.
Do you know of any steady boyfriends she might have had recently, Miss Sheldon?
No. Not former. She couldn't get interested in any man after Carl died, her husband. That's what she told me, anyway. It used to be a great vaudeville team, you know, she and her husband.
Yes, Tom, we know.
Rose and Bernard. That's the way they were built. You ever hear of them? Fine acrobatic routine.
No, afraid not.
Did Miss Porter ever mention anything to you about a steamer trunk that she kept in the room? Anything about what she kept in that trunk?
No, not to me she didn't. It was kind of a standing gag with people in New Selma. She was kind of funny about it.
In what way?
No, Selma was a great talker, you know. This Princess Donald. Selma told everybody about her business. Talked to Bleak Street.
Uh-huh.
She'd talk about her life, her personal affairs. Especially when she had a few drinks. But I don't think I ever heard her mention to anybody what she had in that trunk. She'd hint around about it, call her a gold mine. She never once let anyone see what was in that trunk. Not once.
I'll leave you one of our cards, Miss Sheldon. If you happen to hear anything else that might help us, we'd appreciate it if you give us a call.
Such a terrible mess. I don't know why it had to happen now. Lord knows what I'll look like at the funeral.
Yeah.
I haven't got a decent bag close to my name.
A.M. We checked back into the office to a prearranged meeting set up with Dr. McCready.
All right. Dutch?
Busy?
Pretty small. How about you?
Might have something sent, too.
Where's McCready?
Down in the carpool. There's a bar down on Main Street, left-hand side.
Yeah.
Quarter woman used to go there quite a bit, according to the bartender. Most of the regular customers know her.
Uh-huh.
The bartender told us he overheard a conversation in one of the booths 4 or 5 nights ago. 3 winos. He got their names.
What about them?
Bartender says they were talking about Selma Porter.
Yeah.
He says he heard one of the men say she keeps the trunk in her room. We can break it open.
Thursday, September 3rd, 8 a.m. We rounded up and took into custody the 3 men who'd been overheard while apparently planning a burglary of the murder victim's hotel room. Together with Sergeant Jack Dotch and Sergeant Jack McCready, Frank and I had little trouble locating the 3 men and bringing them in for questioning. They were fairly well known along Skid Row, and they immediately took the attitude that they had nothing to hide. We went along with them. We questioned them individually and together. Meantime, their rooms were being searched. No lead. 2 of the men were brothers, John Parkson and Arnold Parkson. The 3rd man was Harold Young. All 3 listed their occupations as part-time laborers, unemployed. All 3 had records. Vagrancy, disorderly conduct, petty theft. We questioned Harold Young first. Then Arnold Parkson. They both had alibis. Their stories made sense. No conflicting statements. We interrogated the other Parkson brother, John. Same result.
Well, it could have been, yeah. That trunk of Thomas was kind of a gag around town. You know. We act about it a lot. Everybody kidded about it. We even used to rib Thelma. Tell her we're going to break in it some night. Find all the loot she had put away. Just a gag.
I'm going to tell you something. We told this to the other 2. We got an idea it was more than a gag in the case of you 3. We got evidence to back that up. But if you want to add anything more to your story, now's the time to do it, fella.
I don't think I'm getting a pitch right, Sergeant. I told you everything. I don't know what kind of evidence you got, but I'm clean. I know that much. Maybe I booze it up some, but I don't run with heavies. Murder's way out of my line.
That's your story, huh?
What else can I tell you?
Go.
Yeah, you know. Same with the other 2, nothing. We got it all down pat.
Started with a good idea. What do you think, Sandy?
Well, let's let him wait around for a while. We might get something out of him. He's thinking if we can get a bug in one of the offices, it might get something.
Maybe. It's a long way around.
There's nothing much else to do.
He does a chance.
It's small. That's going to cost too much on it.
We checked with Captain Worman's office, and we got permission to have the office bugged. We put in a call to the crime lab and asked them to install listening equipment in the captain's office as soon as possible. They told us that they'd have the sound crew go to work on it immediately. Under the pretext of further questioning, Sergeant Jack Dotch and Frank took the suspects down the hall to the interrogation room where they would be held until the sound men could finish rigging up the equipment. The listening equipment was installed in such a way that we would be able to hear the conversation in any part of the captain's office. Recording equipment and 2 sets of earphones were set up in the locker section off the squad room so that we could monitor the conversation between the 2 suspects. First, we had the two Parkson brothers, John and Arnold, placed alone in the captain's office. We listened to them talk between themselves for a half an hour. They didn't say so directly, but we caught inferences that each brother doubted the other's innocence of the Thelma Porter killing. At 1:30 that afternoon, we took Arnold Parkson from the captain's office and had Harold Young take his place.
Carlson will be feeding us again. I think I'll tell them off when they come in here. Keep us waiting like this. Yeah, you'll tell them off. I'll keep us waiting much longer, and I will. Will you stop using that comb?
You know any lawyer? We'd get out of here in a hurry with a lawyer.
It costs money. We don't need one. Just hope you're sure about it, dearie.
I won't. You're not mixed up in the killing. What do you mean, am I sure of it? I told you. Just be sure, that's all. I don't want any part of it. Yeah, would you be sure, too? You and your brother. You always look at me when something happens.
Don't go say me and my brother. We've never been in any heavy stuff. Killings? No part of it.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. We shouldn't be talking about killings in here.
Why not?
Sometimes the cops wire these rooms.
Oh, you're out of your mind. You've been reading too much fiction.
Yes, they do. They can hear everything you say.
They don't have time to wire anything. I've been here all day.
I'm going to look around. I'm taking no chances. I don't want to get involved in anything. Hide the mic and files or any place you can't see it.
You're crazy.
I'm not taking any chances. I'm going to check everywhere. Sometimes they put them on the chairs.
What do they do, broadcast? Where's the wire?
They hide the mic on the edge of a desk. I've heard of that, too. Let's see.
I'll get in there. What are you doing there? I could hear you clearing the other office, going through the files. I thought I told you to stay put in that chair.
Yes.
Why aren't you there? Sit down. I thought I wanted you to prowl the office, I'd have told you. Now, both of you, stay put in those chairs, you understand?
Crazy, I didn't say.
there.
You said old papers. You said there wasn't anything in the trunk. You were up in her room. You saw her.
You're crazy, Harry.
You
shut
saw
up.
Her and you killed her. Shut up.
All right, that's enough. Come on.
And you know. Jim, he knew about the trunk. He killed her. He's lying, lying. Hit the scene. Now he's lying.
Yeah, that's enough. He knew about the trunk, so he was sitting there. He said old papers in the trunk. He must have killed her.
He's lying. Trying to cover up. That's what he's trying to do. He's lying.
Look, there's a dictaphone in the room. We heard you.
No, you didn't.
It's recorded. We'll play it back for you.
Yeah?
That's right.
I didn't mean it. I didn't mean any of it. She wasn't supposed to be in the room. It wouldn't have happened if she wasn't there.
All right, why'd you do it?
I don't know. I just wanted to see what was in that trunk. She was going to scream, so I hit her with a pipe. She was suffering, so I killed her. I didn't want her to suffer. Just one thing on top of another. When I went there, I didn't even think about killing her. Just wanted to see what was in the trunk. Just wanted to look. I had to find out.
I guess you know.
Papers. Old pieces of newspapers, that's all.
December 7th, trial was held in Department 92, Superior Court of the State of California, in and for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. Further investigation proved that Harold Young and Arnold Parkson were not implicated in the crime, and they were released from custody.
Welcome back. Well, one obvious key point missing from this not being an actual radio series is the sentence for the murderer. And you will know that he was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the State Penitentiary, San Quentin, California, per the lettering on the television show, which doesn't translate to the radio soundtrack. Most of the show translated pretty well. There was actually a lengthy bridge in this episode where it was showing them installing the listening equipment, and I asked Andrew to cut that down a bit, and hopefully he was able to, because it doesn't mean anything listening to it. This will actually be the last radio television soundtrack we play. I did listen to the TV soundtrack for The Big Thief, and as I listened to it, it really became clear, you know, I think for most of it I was okay, but when you got to the last scene, which to me is the most dramatic and important of the program, you're really missing a lot, because it was never intended to be done as a radio play. And I do think that once Jack Webb got into television and started doing television scripts, he used visuals, not overwhelming visuals, but
looks and little gestures to full effect, particularly as he got more proficient in television. The big lamp, I think, worked a lot better than this one did, because that was very early and still kind of feeling his way. It's only his 13th episode over radio, but I think that, or over television. But I thought this was a solid script of the kind of story of a down and outer getting herself into some trouble trying to hold on to glory days. So kind of sad story, but a clever way of catching the crooks. Now, Jeff had asked over on Facebook, was this the final year that we were going to be doing the Big Little Jesus on the Old Time Dragnet show? And that's because we actually only have 5 more weeks left in the program after this week. We also have this comment from Curtis. Says, do y'all have to take Dragnet off? I love the show and like listening to it no matter how many times I've heard an episode. Curtis, I definitely agree with you on that point. The good thing is we're not removing the archives to the show. So you can go back and listen to previous episodes anytime you'd like. You'll have the full archive pretty much on iTunes, or whatever's not on iTunes is on will be on TalkShoe. But the final new episode we'll be adding, and I should add and remind folks once again, that we will be beginning a Saturday episode of Great Detectives of Old Time Radio that will be a police procedural program. And the first program we're going to do will be the lineup, and then we have a couple shorter programs. But in about a year and a half, we will be doing Dragnet as the Saturday program on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. So we'll be back to Dragnet before you know it, I hope. We will bring that episode to you if you're a listener of Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. That'll be up for you on January the 5th. If you're not currently a listener, we will play that on the Old Time Dragnet show on January the 9th. And we'll also include instructions to subscribe to just the procedural show, if that's what you want to do. So our last episode of the series will be February the 4th. If you would like to have a comment read on the air, and included in the last episode, you'll want to have that in no later than about 4 o'clock Mountain Time on January 30th. That's the cutoff time. So if you have any final thoughts on Dragnet, encourage you to get it in by then. Would like some of the material sooner, just in case we get a lot of comments, so we don't run too far over on that final closing segment with all the listener comments and feedback. But we welcome it, and if you do want to get it in, I encourage you to get in touch with us by January the 30th. So we still have a few more episodes left, and I haven't heard any of them, so 5 more weeks of new episodes of my favorite program ahead, and of course a new series and a new new adventures over on Great Detectives with the lineup. All right, well, some additional comments and feedback. Michael writes in, my sister was flicking around the channels today and it came across a show she thinks was titled The New Dragnet, which none of us ever knew existed. I think I prefer Jack Webb, though. There is a show, The New Dragnet, and I'm encouraged to hear about it actually being on television. New Dragnet was a syndicated series that was produced back in 1989. It was done in conjunction with a new Adam 12 series, which, let me be honest, was just pretty awful. But I liked the New Dragnet show. Certainly, they didn't have the star power or the pure drama of the better Dragnet episodes. But they did have, I think, the spirit of the original show. with two partners who played off each other fairly well, as well as realistic stories of crime detection and investigation. Most of these updated for the 1980s and early 90s. I found it enjoyable as opposed to the L.A. Dragnet series, which I didn't care for. The one downside about the show is they didn't have the theme music, the Walter Schumann theme music. It had an updated theme, which I thought was pretty exciting and okay. So if it's on television, I'm glad to hear it. I thought it was a decent show from what I saw on Hulu. Stars, of course, were Jeff Osterhage and Bernard White. So, again, not an all-star cast, but the type of people who would often end up playing character roles on the original Dragnet. I did have one listener say she was not able to she sent a voicemail, kind of a bad reception. The gist, as I understood it, was that she was not able to see any Dragnet TV shows. It's important there are two Dragnet feeds over on iTunes, one with a Jack Webb art picture in the performing arts category. That one has video, while the other one does not. That one has audio and more audio than the feed with video. So that would be my guess as to what might be causing the issue. If you have additional questions on that, email me. Finally, we have this comment from over on iTunes. iTunes review just simply gives 5 stars and says thanks. Well, thanks, and that's from Phil. Thanks so much, Phil, for your support and for listening. And that will actually finish us up for today. We will be back next Saturday, resuming with the last 5 episodes of Dragnet. In the meantime, send your comments to Box13 at GreatDetectives.net and follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Andrew Ryan does our sound. You can follow his podcast at otrwesterns.com, and Ken Curlin provides the opening theme. KenCurlin.com is his website. But from Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.